brought to you this morning by First Baptist Church, and I get the opportunity to spend a little bit of time this morning talking with congressional candidate for the 1st District House seat, and Kevin Hearn. Good morning, Kevin. Thanks for joining me by telephone this morning, and thanks for calling in from the Tulsa area.
Good morning, Charlie. Thanks for having me today.
Hey, good morning. Thank you very much for your time. And I know I try to address this every time you and I or any of the other candidates talk. Yes, it is Election Day a year from this upcoming November, if the calendar holds. However, I'll mention that Mr. Bridenstine is still in the consideration for NASA directorship, so his term could end sooner, which is one reason, I think, why so many candidates are announcing early.
That's right, Charlie. I think probably no one wants to know more so quickly than Congressman Bridenstine and his staff. There's nothing more tough than to have this waiting game to see, first of all, when the appointments are going to be announced, and to, then secondly, probably equally important, is if you're going to be the candidate for that position. So no one knows exactly what's going to come out of the administration, not the congressman or anyone else. So don't know where that group of folks are going to come out at. That's an independent agency, so it's not a cabinet position, as most know, and that position they report directly to Vice President Pence, so again, it's unknown.
Exactly. I was talking with Brian O'Hara last week from the congressman's staff, and he was, I'll say justifiably, talking that he has plans right now to finish the term with the congressman, but then what else would you expect Brian to say? So that's kind of what the unofficial word is. I'm sure they would be very pleased if he picked up the other job. Anyway, you are out on the campaign trail, not actively as you would maybe a year from now, but certainly out talking with people. And I'm sure you're hearing what's on the minds of taxpayers in the first congressional district. Something that was just in the news here over the last 24 hours, and we just heard it from Cal Thomas, Anthem dropping out of the Ohio Exchange. It doesn't affect Oklahomans other than Oklahoma is a similar situation. In many areas, I believe there is one company on the network for Obamacare. That's not what was sold to the American people, certainly not what people were hoping for. We were looking for free market opportunities and more choices, not fewer.
Yeah, Charlie, exactly what you just said at the end of your statement there about free market choices. Anytime the government has tried this experiment of being trying to control and dictate things in the federal government or in the society of our citizens, and be directive in taking the free market competitiveness out of it, it's been a disaster. And we could go on and talk about those various things. But health is something that every individual looks at very preciously and doesn't like, do not like to be dictated about what they're going to do. And as a business owner, I know most of the people out there that don't, have employees. And if you don't have over 50 employees, you're not subjected to the Obamacare from an employer standpoint. With 400 employees in my business, this has been a problem since day one. I spend just $3,000. We talk about the insurance companies pulling out, also what it's doing to the businesses. Just in my my 10 restaurants, I spend about $3,000 a month just in compliance, not the cost of the insurance, but just compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And the individuals out there, the House did their version of the repeal and replace, and sent to the Senate and tried to work around the nuances of the parliamentary procedures. And it's right now it seems a little bit all for naught, because it doesn't appear from all indications that the Senate is going to have the willpower, if you will, to remove the employer mandates and the employee mandates. And without doing that, you really haven't changed much. And so we have a lot of younger in generation. If you just digress back to when this started in the conversations in 2008, Dr. Coburn predicted in many meetings that this would end up as a single-payer system because it would collapse upon itself. There would be no doctors, to be sure of doctors. The insurance companies couldn't afford it because the government couldn't afford to subsidize this forever. And he's, call it a crystal ball or somebody that just understood free market principles. And we're seeing this, 7-8 years later. It is very difficult for a business owner, especially a small business owner, to deal with this. You get fined if you don't have the right processes in place. when you announce to people. It's just a very cumbersome system. We're just hearing it in the news about the insurance companies and the problems they're having. You know, nobody's going out really talking to the small business owners and the individuals, the impact it has on them. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, Kevin, so this is something, and I know you being in the restaurant business, restaurants as a class of businesses operated on a somewhat narrower profit margin than many other classes of business, and so I think you as a restaurateur have to watch your budget even more closely, and that means you'd like to make choices and make the best choice for your employee at the same time the best dollar match for your business, but if there's only one choice on an exchange, you take the choice there is.
Well, exactly. I would say, you know, our margins run between 2% and 4%. I mean, that's bottom line after taxes. I mean, that's what we operate on. And so, you know, if you look at that, you know, you have to be in the penny business every day. You know, maybe something our government should look at.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you're want to, you know, you have to balance all the expenses, and that's your labor and your benefits that go with those labor costs as well to move your business forward. You have to invest in your people and do the right thing. We actually had an appropriate Blue Cross Blue Shield program through the McDonald's system nationwide for our employees that was less expensive, that fit their needs, and they could buy catastrophic coverage, which is, you know, that's the model that we're talking about. If we didn't have Obamacare, what should we have? We should have something to meet the rudimentary procedures out there that a younger person would need for his or her family, and then have a crash, you know, when we have issues such, you know, other tragedies like cancer or, you know, something like that, that we have a catastrophic coverage that would help do that. It would be very little cost associated with that because of the risk pool. And so, you know, people need to look at that, you know, how the impact of that really hits the businesses and the people as well. I mean, if you're a younger person, our average rates are a little over $10 an hour. If you're a younger person and you're making, you know, $25,000-$30,000 a year, and you're doing this because you're going to school part time, or it's one of your couple jobs, or it's a part time job, the last thing you want to do is spend 10% possibly on health care. I mean, I'm not saying you don't need it sometime in your future, but it's not what you, it's not high on your priorities, and you get very frustrated. And here's, Charlie, the bottom line. Here is the problem: the individuals out there, they blame the business owners.
Sure.
They blame the business owners because we're the ones taking it out of their checks. But the reality is that that's the problem with all the business owners. I mean, if you could have a show with all the business owners that are out there to come on your show, they would all tell you the same thing. And here's another crazy thing. If you have more than 50 employees, which every McDonald's restaurant has usually 50 or more, you're treated just like IBM, just like ConocoPhillips. You're in the same pool. I mean, 50 and infinity, you're the same size. And so you think about that as a small business owner, you're going to try to keep your numbers below 50. And you're going to try to not, you know, that's a business owner. They try to minimize cost and maximize the value of their business. That's the nature of being in business. And so it has put a really strong noose around growth, economic growth in this country that, you know, people have been screaming about for years, and the prior administration just didn't care, and, you know, President Trump is trying to unwind.
Exactly. And the way they passed it through Congress, and I'm trying to transition over to budget-related items here, Kevin, as far as it passed through Congress, basically as a budget measure. You know, there was this a disagreement, even in the courts, you know, was this a fee or a tax? And depending on, you know, we passed the bill because it was a fee, but then we sold it to the Supreme Court because it's a tax. So, I mean, it's just one of those things that it's all wound up in the budget system now at the federal government level as well.
Well, and that's part of the problem. I mean, they don't have the tax reform going on right now because there's roughly $1 trillion that would be saved out in the system by getting the Obamacare policies changed. And, you know, I think there's a big headline in what you just talked about it being changed and sent to the Supreme Court, and then just Chief Justice John Roberts calling it a tax on a 5-4 vote. And if you think about that 5-4 vote, it's a great example. When people across the district talk to me, well, it's hopeless, there's nobody can do anything, you know, you really think you can make a difference. And I remind them that by one vote, we have Obamacare. So one vote makes a huge difference in the lives of the people in this district and across the state and the country.
And now as the current Congress, in cooperation with the president, but really it's the Congress that passes the budget, money bills are supposed to all start in the House, although the Senate can talk about it, I think. It's a matter of this, you know, House responsibility to get a budget passed, and I don't remember the numbers exactly, but since something like 1977, we've passed a budget in regular order, I think it's seven times. The House and the Senate collectively have abrogated that responsibility by simply passing continuing resolutions too many times.
Well, to your point, Charlie, we've abdicated the House has abdicated responsibility to just continuing resolutions and, you know, omnibus bills just so we can continue the government running. And, you know, and Congressman Bridenstine has been very adamant that that's not what we need to do to continue funding at the previous levels, because we continue the deficits, which grow the debt. And, you know, it's an atrocity, the debt that's been increased in the last 8 years, you know, going from $10 trillion that we had from all presidents prior to President Obama to just within his 8 years, $10 trillion more. So, yeah, you know, doubling the debt in 8 years versus the prior, you know, 100-plus years that we were in existence. Right. And when you look at that, you know, there's a bigger issue, too, that most people aren't aware of. It's not just the power of the purse that we see in a transparent world here in the conversations back and forth with continuing resolutions. When you think about what's going on with these agencies out there that, and we can go on and use like the parks and recs and places like that, that go out and charge fees for gate entrances, as an example, park fees. In 2015, just a number for our listeners to hear, 2015, those collective fees across the United States that were collected from U.S. citizens and visitors from abroad and brought into those respective agencies was roughly $519 billion. That $519 billion, zero of that went back into the budgeting process that was kept within the agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we don't have, our power of the purse has been lost, and we have to regain that.
As a potential elected official then, Kevin, and I realize you would be one vote of more than 400, but, you know, how do you get that process kicked down the road, hopefully in cooperation with a few other House representative members that says, you know, we need to just go back to what was the original intent and get this thing process going right?
Well, you know, I think, Charlie, in all fairness to, you know, our previous legislators that we've had up there, especially from our state, is we've dealt with an administration. You know, if you just look at the last 8 years, and maybe even the last couple of years of President Bush, but certainly the last 8 years, you know, we've had an administration that's been trying to replace the Constitution in the original way it was written. They've been trying to replace that with their own ideals of trying to make everything free and just, you know, doling out things completely that were unconstitutional. I think we need to transition from just having to fight those battles to now we have a president that's running every day on really strict principles of getting back to a limited government with free market principles and a stronger defense so that we're not dealing with these things abroad. And it's just taking a little bit of time to transition here. And so with that said, we're going to need to get House members and Senate members that can sort of transition to help him support that. You know, when you look at, we have complete control of the administration of the House and the Senate, and for all intents and purposes, a conservative majority in the court, we should be moving this country, you know, much more right, and I mean that both in the literal and the figurative sense. We should be moving much more aggressive on our economic growth, and we're not. And I think it's because we have people that haven't created jobs there, that haven't ran businesses, and people that don't understand big budgets, things that I've done for the last 20-plus years.
Well, we're going to take a short break and continue our time with Kevin Hearn in just a moment. We'll remind you we're talking with candidate for the 1st Congressional District seat, Kevin Hearn. We'll continue right after this from First Baptist Church.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church is focused on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
K1, continuing with candidate Kevin Hearn. And in the news over the last, I'll say, few days, and even this morning, North Korea, South Korea have been in the news. We have heard about terrorism-related events in Europe. World events don't stop whether we change presidents or change congressmen or not. But there's certainly, when we talk about the budgeting process, when we talk about the policy process, things can change as we look at who we choose for our congressmen, our elected officials. And Kevin, world events or defense issues, both are good topics. Let's talk about your views and how you would represent the 1st District.
Thanks, Charlie. I served in the Air Force and Navy back when I was a much, much younger person than I am now. My dad retired from the Air Force. Two uncles retired from the Air Force, fought around the world. My dad was in Vietnam. And, you know, when you look at, when I grew up, you know, when I graduated high school, we had a very similar situation. We were being ran over from abroad, from Iran at that time, ironically. And President Carter, who should have been a big defense hawk coming out of the Naval Academy, but we were being ran over, and we had a guy that nobody really thought was going to be as strong as he was, but a guy named Ronald Reagan became our president. And he's a guy that kind of, his values and ideas, the one who started me in my career of working and being educated and on the world ideas. And his was, you know, peace through strength, build up a strong military, and let's deter those things. And I, you know, President Trump is in that same mode right now. We've got, you know, we had our military, a Navy that was the size it was back in World War One, and we've got, you know, that's going to be our principal deterrent is our Navy, and we've got to get our Navy built back up, and it's going to take money to do that. You know, roughly the defense budgets are roughly $600 billion out of our $4.1 trillion budget. I know that none of us like to, the horrors of war are just a tragedy, but it's what it takes to defend our freedom. And I will tell you also, Charlie, that, you know, national defense is not just, you know, our Navy, but it's also how we protect our sovereignty. And I've been a strong supporter of building the border wall. I know that, you know, some people think that that's, you know, not humane, but it's not all for the same reason that most think. It's also about the drugs and the bad people that want to hurt us. They're coming across the southern border. We've done a great job shutting down most of the bad people coming on planes and ocean liners. But we don't see many people swimming across the Atlantic or Pacific Ocean to harm us. So they must be coming in very rapidly across the southern border. And we, you know, we do a physical wall, virtual wall, whatever. But we need to send a message to the world that our southern border is closed to the bad people. And the ancillary benefit of that is we slow down the illegal immigration. But what you see on that conversation from President Trump is you see a lot of people, illegal immigration, declining rapidly. We don't need this ebb and flow based on who's president. We need to have this secured once and for all so that into the future we can protect our southern border and send a message to our citizens that we're protecting them. Just a couple of numbers. I know there's been a lot of numbers thrown out there about the cost of the wall. But do you know from the government's own numbers that we've spent $1 trillion over the last 10 years on managing drug issues? That's, you know, deterrence, that's rehabilitation, that's drug bust. And a lot of that money that's been spent by the individual users, that cash goes back to Mexico. So we could do a one-time spend and fix a lot of issues. And so national defense, I think, is a broad, broad issue. It's what we do abroad. It's what we also do to protect the homeland.
It is a combined issue, and that really funds several different programs and budget areas. You mentioned Navy, but I'll take it from my Air Force point of view. Either way, it takes a procurement process to acquire, to build, to buy ships, to buy aircraft, to buy tanks, missiles, anything that we use in the defense effort, let alone the manpower, the new recruits, the middle management. NCOs, the top NCOs and officer corps, we need to continue to build up those numbers. So we're talking about a continued increase in the defense budget in many areas, right?
We do. And, you know, Charlie, I worked before I became a small business owner in McDonald's many years ago. I worked in the aerospace industry. I actually worked for Rockwell, the people who built the current Hellfire missile that's fired off the drone. So that ammunition has been built for 40 years now, 35, 40 years.
I worked
around the world.
Worked on a lot of radio equipment built by Rockwell or by their Collins division anyway. So, yeah, that's some good stuff.
Well, and the thing about it's interesting, you know, when you look at that cost of that missile, what it's escalated, you know, I've been asked on a regular basis, am I for auditing the Pentagon, auditing the Defense Department? And my response to that is I'm for everyone that takes taxpayer dollars to be accountable to the taxpayer for the dollars being taken in and where they go. So by inclusion, that would also include the Pentagon. The problem with that, and Dr. Coburn's talked about this for years, is that the technology, the accounting systems are so antiquated that they don't even know where everything's at. You know, and just by extension of that, if you look at the surplus equipment that we just buried or crushed or exploded over in Kuwait, so they're bringing it back and giving it as an example to our police officers so they have protection on the street from people that have better armaments than they do.
Right.
We need to figure out how to be able to track our inventories, bring technology into the 21st century for our military, and so that we can track and keep the money flowing to the people that are on the tip of the spear, the people on the ground, the people in the planes, the people on the ships. And we just have a lot of money lost right now. You know, and what's happened, because of our ebbs and flows in how we buy defense equipment, we've had a lot of consolidation in the defense industry. And when you get only one or two suppliers, your competitive bidding really goes away. And so we need to broaden that out and allow more people to bid and get into the business and be more competitive on our pricing.
Kevin, I appreciate your opinions. I know we're going to continue to talk this conversation, whether it's a near-term election or whether we're talking about a November of 2018. Either way, this is a topic we're going to continue on. If people would like to find out more about you, your views, maybe ask you to come to speak to their community organization, whatever that might be, one of the ways they can contact you is through your website, right?
That's correct. Hearn for Congress, H-E-R-N for Congress, .com. And we have all of our information on there. We'd love to, anybody has any events they want me to come speak to, we're getting our calendars filled up, and we have three or four events going on every day, and it's awesome. And Charlie, I always appreciate getting the opportunity to talk to you and the folks of Bartlesville.
Well, we appreciate our ability to inform voters, and I still believe that informed voters in general make good choices, which is one reason why I take the time to talk with you and other folks that are running for elected office. Kevin, thank you so much for your time this morning, for letting us hear your views on some topics. And I know there's a lot of field that we did not take the time to cover, but we'll try to get that in next time. Candidate for the 1st District Congressional House seat, Kevin Hearn, thank you very much for your time this morning. Sunshine headed for a high temperature around 83 degrees. We are just about 5 minutes or so away from CBS News. News on the way next from the Oklahoma News Network. It's 5 minutes before 9 o'clock at K1.
From the Oklahoma News Network.